Hey, welcome to the DIY Garage. I'm Brian Joslin, and we're coming to you today from SEMA 2024 in Las Vegas. With me today is Brian Brennan, editorial director at In the Garage Media, who publishes classic truck performance, modern rodding, and all Chevy performance magazines. Before we get talking to Brian, I just want to remind you that you can catch the DIY Garage on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and all other popular podcast platforms. You can also catch us on YouTube in video format, and you can go to eastwood.com/garage and click the podcast tab to see us in either format. Either way, we hope you'll join us and subscribe to get every episode. So welcome to the garage here. Well, we have a lot in common with that, with that name. It's great to have you here.
Well, thank you for making your name Brian, too. It's easy for me to remember.
You're the second Brian we've recorded today, too, so it's a common name. Yeah. I got to ask, how many SEMAs for you? Because I know you've been in the business a while.
Oh, yeah. Well, technically, my first SEMA would have been in the early 70s, so let's say 72-ish, 3-ish.
Yeah.
And, of course, I've missed a few over the years, but by and large, I've been here every year. The fun part is, I remember the SEMA show. One year, it was at the Anaheim Convention Center.
Right.
Very few people
before it came out to
that.
Vegas.
Yeah. And at the time, Dick Wells was the head. He ran the marketing arm of SEMA and whatnot. And I actually took a drive out here with him the day he made the presentation to the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
Hey, we do this trade show. It's called SEMA, and this is what it does, and it's regards the automotive aftermarket. And we're growing, and we'd like to come to Vegas because we need more space. Well, the fathers in Vegas gave it some thought. Thought, well, you know, we can give it a try. We'll see if it'll work.
It's working out pretty well for them.
I think that's a foregone.
I think a lot of people may not even realize that it hasn't always been in Vegas.
No,
it started in Southern California. SEMA is based in Southern California.
Yeah, and in the earliest shows, people will even remember Dodger Stadium out underneath the, you know, the stadium structure, the seats. It was in the hallways there that get you around the stadium. So, it has a storied past, and it's got some great names, you know, some of the first companies that were involved. They are the core of this industry, and many of them are still around, and that's good.
Yeah.
It's very good.
I know you've been in the publishing business a long time. Give me a little backstory on how you got to In the Garage Media and your magazines, because I know that wasn't...
In the Garage Media, as you said, produces the three books, Modern, Rod, and Classic Truck Performers, and All Chevy Performance. And we came about, we are a product of the beginning of COVID.
Okay.
And we are also a product of the fact at the time, Motor Trend was the company name, and it had all of the car magazines, the top of the car magazines, about 2022. And they decided to just stick with their video format, their film format. And so they parted ways, they raised all of the... Well, they raised 19 of the 21 books, so they went away. That's when all of a sudden I became unemployed. And
It's Motor Trend and Autograph. Those are the two remaining.
Yes, but the reality is there's some speaking, and I believe it will occur here shortly, where Motor Trend and Hot Rod magazines have been purchased, and so that's going to change. Now, that takes us from COVID up to now. But prior to all of that, I spent 25 years there with the Motor Trend Company, which before that was all sorts of names, but it was based in Peterson, Publisher. And I did Street Rod. And then I had my own group of both. So there was Street Rodder and Vet Magazine and Classic Trucks Magazine and Chevy High and then Super Chef. So I headed up that group, a bunch of guys who I still, to this day, work with a number of. I mean, Rob Fortier, who was the truck flip back then, is doing our truck flip now. Nip Licata, who was doing the Chevy books back then, is doing a Chevy book now. And some of the ladies in the office, I say ladies, I'm trying to be polite, but they're so much younger than me, I call them girls. They worked with us while we were at the other company. And it was a seamless transition, but worked with CSK Publishing, which at the time was an East Coast-based company that did Muscle Mustang to Fast Forwards.
There were a lot of integrations over the years.
What happened was is it became K3, and they had purchased CSK, and then it started growing, and it was actually CSK, that organism that was purchased Peterson,
And then some of the books went away, and some did this and some did that. But
since the early 70s, I've been you and Mahar books.
Yeah. These were all of us growing up before we became famous.
It was just guys that got together, and you got to do something to pay the rent.
Yeah. So you made a conscious decision to stick with print as its part of your format, right? So talk about that a little bit.
What people have to understand, in the early days, there were print magazines. That was pretty much it, how you got your information. In this day and age, pick something. I mean, you have social media, you have websites, you have YouTube. You have all types of personalized forms, like Instagram, that type of social media. And then you have print magazines. But just so everyone understands, yes, we do monthly print magazines. But this same magazine is in a digital format, and it can be delivered to your iPhone, your iPad, your computer, wherever you want. We understand that in this day and age, print is not the only way to get your information. My favorite wheel, the American five-spoke mag wheel. Think of the consumer or the enthusiast is the center of that up. It's what holds the wheel together. And the different spokes are, you got print, you have digital, we have website, you have social media, you have YouTube. You have all of that, and then throw in events, and there's live events. And of course, we're at all the live events. We have video crews that film the live events. We have the editorial degrees, such as myself, who go out to events and handle the print. So yes, we do print, but much, much largely.
Some publications have abandoned their print altogether. For you, what's the value? And I'm with you, value it as well. But
it's a valid question. Remember, one of the founding books of the whole industry that got it going was Hot Rod. And then after Hot Rod, you had Rod and Custom and whatnot. And as time grew on, a book called Street Rotten. Well, they cultivated an audience. Now, that audience is on the higher end of the age spectrum, but they haven't stopped doing the sports. And they still prefer to get their information input. And said that, we understand the younger guys coming up, they're used to having their cell phone with them, and they're used to getting their information immediately and seeing it on their cell phone. So that's why we're appealing to the core audience strength, but we understand the future is electronic.
Yeah.
So we're blending them together. Interesting aside, there's no question the future is electronic. We understand. I made a little play on words. It's the 50th issue, not our 50th year anniversary.
Right.
That's 4.5 years, and we have now proven it works.
A monthly is it's a strong commitment.
For a couple of guys who fund this for their own money, it's been an experience. We have found that the core audience is supporting us.
Yeah.
Well, what did that mean? Well, that means we have to prove to the advertisers that we have in the book that if you print with us, that's still a viable
in terms of your dollar, right?
But we explained to them you're not only getting the rent, we're also including you out of the digital
circuit. Looking at the whole, yes, the whole press.
When they sit down and they get, and people have now been exposed to electronic media, social media, etc., long enough to where, okay, it's not the new kid on the block. It's one component that I need in a market program.
Yeah. It's interesting. I printed a Land Rover magazine about 3 years up until COVID.
Sure, interestingly. I mean, I'm a maturing point for a lot of people.
And we were print only, but, you know, people loved the disappear with the magazine. It wasn't another screen in their face.
Right.
And we got a lot of respect for doing a print magazine out of the gate. It was not a cheap endeavor at all.
No.
But it was a great product. And I think a lot of people still enjoy disconnecting from the digital world from time to time.
And you mentioned about getting away from a screen and getting in your dark room and relaxing, and they have a book. There's something about the tactile feeling of having printed pages, which is one of the reasons why we went with a slightly oversized format.
It's a nice part of the book.
And we went with a better grade of paper because we wanted to enhance that experience. Invariably, when you get to the car feature site, I am here to tell you there is no if, ands, or buts about it. A guy wants his car or truck in print on magazine because there's so few in a given year.
Right.
It's like you've had to run a gauntlet. and you were picked, and you made it here. It's like anything else, whether you're doing a electronic, a digital website, etc., no matter what you're doing, or whether you're doing print. If you have an original idea, people love originals. I'm not saying I discovered print, well, the type of material it covers original, but it's the way we present it, and it's the enthusiasm we bring from past, and our enthusiasm to participate in the hobby going forward. That's what's do it. Yeah, I know what you're saying, but believe me, there's a lot to be said for print.
There is. And the quality matters a lot more these days. The ones that kind of fell into comic book kind of, you know, small form, massive feels, kind of like May.
Well,
and it's not a $9 cover price with her, so it's a more expensive endeavor for the reader itself that they're getting value.
Well, what we used to say when electronic media first came on the scene to print and they were competing, the one thing we tried to point out to the advertisers was understand that there's a financial commitment in this,
right?
Our cover price of $1. There's a financial commitment, so the guy buying this must like what he sees, must be an enthusiast, and he has every intention of doing this for a while and building project. Whereas if you get the casual viewer online, no disrespect, but that's what you get. You get volume, but you get a lot of casualness about it. You don't get that firm commit, though. And so that's what we believe we bring to the party. So we bring committed enthusiasts.
I could talk magazines with you all day, trust me. One of the other reasons I wanted to have you on, because you've been in the industry for so long and been part of SEMA for so long, is to talk about what you're seeing as a magazine publisher. I'm also an attendee here. In terms of new trends within a very mature kind of market, right? The street routing, it's not a new market, but it's constantly evolving. So how has that changed in recent years, and what do you see on the horizon?
You bring up a very good point. The way something moves forward is it evolves. So that means it has to change. And that's what the SEMA show has done. It's evolving, it's changing. The people we see in the halls here, yes, there's a lot of familiar names. There's a lot of new names. To the point where I had no idea with some of them are, so I got to sit there and read hits. And notice I said read. I've got to read about what they're doing and they're producing. And I go, oh, that's a cool idea. But at the core value of our hobby and the industry is something called creativity. Everybody thinks they've got the next best widget. And so we have all these car filters out, and they have a vision. That fundamental idea has not changed since day one. There is a young guy who is now an old man now and a longtime builder, but there's also that young guy hasn't really built his first successful project yet. They both have, you're at the core, they're built the same. That desire to succeed and be creative and show the world what they can do. I see things and I go, whoa, that's cool. And it's because someone much younger than me and much newer to the industry has taken his creativity and what he's learned, and he's pushed that bar just a little bit higher. He's opened a few more doors. I walked the show this year at first, and I went, oh, okay, and then I started looking a little deeper in what I'm seeing as far as trends. There is no question that what's being built is being built at higher level. The technology that's being used and the tools is advancing. So the end product is even more advanced and better and whatnot. I am very excited about where everything is going in the future, knowing full well I may not get all of it and I may not understand it. I may not even like it, but that's irrelevant. What's relevant is this is the next iteration.
Yes. Have you seen any trends from the past that have been the younger generations of discovery?
And the funny thing is, it doesn't look the same.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, you get it. That makes sense. And I see that with everything. I don't care. Now, this is a C2 Corvette. That's something that's from the 60s, that era. But you take a young builder, Chris Ryan, you built that. Now, he's not a young builder, but he's not one of the older builders. He's right there in that evolving mixture of builders that quite good and a lot of good ideas. And he can take what I might have done 50 years ago. But he's using what's available to him today, and he's taking it to that next level. So yes, I don't care if it's an early car, whether it's a Corvette, whether it's a later model truck, whether it's a C10 from 67 to 72, or maybe it's something from, you know, the 78 and later, or 90. They're all being blended in together. It's actually quite fun to look at.
Yeah. With you being based in Southern California, and this culture really evolving largely out of Southern California, are you seeing other kind of regional trends? Are you seeing cars come out of places other than Southern California at this point?
Oh, all the
really high quality stuff.
Oh, yeah. In fact, when the trends and all of this first started, let's say in Southern California, the fact of the matter was there were guys in the Midwest, Daryl Starper. There were guys in the South, builders who were building cars, or the East Coast. What the West Coast builders had that no one had the time there, and this is where time and technology of level playing field from magazines were produced in Southern California. So I'm working behind a desk. I got to go do a story. It's pretty easy for me to get in my car and drive to Burbank, West Hollywood, or to Orange County, or wherever, to a builder and get a story. So who's getting the ink? The local cars. And so that's when the first street rod events, the first one being in Peoria, and then, you know, we all are familiar with the National Street Rod Association and Good Guys, right, all of that. It was those events that started bringing individuals like you and I in their own cars out of wherever we live, and causing us to come to a different area. I can look at your ideas, you can look at mine, and we went home and we ended up with different iterations of that idea, but it's the idea we shared something. Well, the big time builders came together.
Yeah.
Well, people don't realize how good of friends these builders are to one another. If you go to, there's an event called the Triple Crown of Rodding, and it brings in a lot of the really great cars in the country. That's a given. But what it also brings in is, at any given time, there'll be 15 to 20 major builders. It's the, with all due respect to SEMA, it's the only show that I have seen that's had this many high-profile names in one place at one time you could actually talk to. I'll ask my dumb question, but I get an honest answer. And so the electronic media, the best thing it's done for us is it's levered playing field nationwide.
I was noticing some of the bylights and some of the Ariettes in there. And it seems like maybe I'm not familiar with the names, but it seems like you may be pulling people that already have a following of their own motorcycle or dweller.
The fellows who write and take the pictures are, many of them have been around a long time. Some of them are newer, younger guys that are coming up. We're cultivating what they're doing. Nothing replaces experience, right? Okay. I don't care how much technology you have at your fingertips or how good you are, or even how creative you are. There is something that comes from having been there, done that. And that's what a lot of these guys bring to the table. And it's the stories you never hear about. Like when we're shooting either this cover or this cover here, John Jackson, he shot both up, I believe. What went on at that shoot? What funny story can you tell? And was it a good experience for the car owner and the car builder? And does seeing it in the magazine now completely decycle? There was one time, poor Bobby Alloway, we were shooting a cover of his car, and it was a car that was being debuted here at SEMA. And it was going to be at the HRIA banquet, and it could be on the cover of Screen Rider magazine. And we're taking the photos, and it was a driving shot. And we kept telling him, a little faster, until it went a little too fast. And he clipped what's called the brow on a 34 roaster down here at the bottom, and it ruined the paint. Bobby, to this day, has never forgiven me. It keeps reminding me how much time they've cost him to fix that so they could get the car back in the trailer and get it out here to the SEMA show. Another one that I'm on the Alloway stories right now, but there was another one that had at the 49th annual Grand National Roadster Show, Bobby's car that he built once. It was the last of the Boyd Coddington bodies that he was doing. on the cover, I put the cover blurb, "Is this America's most beautiful roast?" Well, the magazine came out the same time of the show. That was all by design. But people interpreted it different, meaning I knew the car was going to win. And oh my God, the flack he got from the show promoters and whatnot. But it's those kind of behind the scenes stories that every magazine cover has. And that's something that maybe at first when you look at the magazine, you don't realize. It's all the untold stories.
Sure.
That are fantastic. And that's why things like podcasts, are fun for me, because they allow you to sit down with any number of people and you get to pick their brain. And invariably that story comes up that you never would have seen or heard about.
Yeah.
And now you get to present it to the world. And that's what makes podcasts so interesting, is you get at the moment or recollection in someone's mind that didn't make it anywhere else.
One last thought I had. All the talk about younger generations not being interested in cars. Are you saying that, or do you have open future of the auto hobby in general on a broader sense?
Okay, the simple answer is no. It's exciting. Everything is going good. There's lots of future out there. What I am seeing, though, from a social context, when I was growing up and I was 14, 15, 16 years old, I couldn't wait to get my driver's license. I didn't care what I drove, as long as I could drive. My grandkids, that just gave away my age, my grandkids are past the point of having to get driving. They don't rely on cars the way we might have, and because a lot of their traveling can be done electronically.
Yes. Okay. I have a 19-year-old daughter, I know.
Okay, all right, you get it. Now, having said that, they're just going to come back into it, and they are doing it in their way. So they do spend too much time on the electronic media, but they're getting exposed to a lot of ideas. And when they, and they'll settle in on topics. I don't care if it's nitty. Now I notice there's a little bit more interest, you know.
Yeah.
It is a little bit, but it'll grow. And nice. And when that happens, that's such a good feeling. And so, short answer to your question is, yes, I feel good about the hobby. And I know we didn't talk about Eastwood and all of that, but I had such... They worked very closely. We worked.
I worked with Nick over the years.
Oh, Kapinski for years and years. And we had our tool column where we did lots of fun stuff. And I still have all my tools that he helped me get. Still have them in the toolbox. Still have them in the garage. Still there. And that's something that is missed in all of this. It's the hands-on feeling, the personal satisfaction you get from working in tools. And it's a way to save money. So you buy tools and you work to do something. It's a good thing. But it gives you so much personal satisfaction. And I think what it does is it enhances your core of your self-worth.
Absolutely.
And then that emanates out into how you do your daily job, whatever that might be. It's the introduction to that one tool that you can pull into the one thing that makes you dream.
Good stuff.
Appreciate it.
Oh, you appreciate it.
Great talking.
Okay.
Enjoy the rest of the show. Are your feet hurt yet?
My feet gave up yesterday.
Yeah.
So we'll just do the best we can right now to finish out. And I hope we have a hell of a fun day with more interviews.
Very much appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Brian.